Hello and welcome to another of our British Equestrian podcasts. We are back for Female Health February, and this time this issue is brought to you by popular demand. We have really enjoyed the response that we've had so far to the content we've been putting out on social media. You know, clearly, well, everyone's clearly very much enjoying this. There's, you know, we're answering a lot of questions. There's a lot of demand there. But one of the things actually that was coming up last week, a lot of people were talking about menopause and asking us to put out a bit more information because, you know, there's a lot of questions there and we want to help. And so here we are. We are happy to oblige. We've come together. We're putting together this impromptu episode. And hopefully, yeah, we can get to the bottom of some of those questions. Menopause is one of those stages in life that around 50% of society are going to go through at some point. But apart from kind of the obvious side effects, hot flushes, night sweats, all that kind of thing, there's often a lack of understanding about what's actually involved. So to delve a bit deeper into this, and of course the perimenopause side of it as well, and how this can affect your time in the saddle, I am joined by two people who are very passionate about this subject and are willing to come and talk about this subject, which is excellent. This is what
we've been there, done it.
Exactly. So first up, you've already heard from her for Female Health February. She's very much one of the brains behind this whole campaign, is Ash Wallace. She is our world-class programmes athlete health lead and lead human physio based at the UK Sports Institute at Bisham Abbey. Welcome, Ash.
Thanks very much, Rachel, and thanks so much for inviting me back. It's a subject I'm definitely very passionate about, so looking forward to having a chat.
And joining Ash as well, we've got Mia Pallas-Clark. She is a level 4 show jumping coach and mentor with over 25 years of experience. She's represented Great Britain at the Veteran European Show Jumping Championship and is the trainer for the British Army show jumping team. Welcome, Mia.
Thank you, Rachel. Oh my goodness me, 25 years experience. That just says everything about where I am in my life. I am really excited to be able to talk about this topic. So thank you.
Thank you both for joining us. We're delighted to have you. I'm delighted to have you here. So let's dive straight into this then. And this is probably one I'm throwing to you, Ash.
Yep.
What actually is the menopause? Is perimenopause? What does this mean?
Great question, Rach. So menopause, very, very clearly, is the definition of menopause is that it starts once your menstrual cycle has stopped for a year. And obviously with that, it brings many physical and mental symptoms. So that's, and we're kind of more familiar with menopause. I think there's less familiarity around perimenopause. And in my opinion, I actually think this stage is probably the phase that absolutely, I think, affects athletes the most and certainly most women, because I think there's a lack of awareness of that phase. And perimenopause may begin sometimes 4 to 7 years before you actually go into menopause, so before your periods stop. And basically what's happening in that period is the ovaries are gradually beginning to produce less and less estrogen and progesterone hormones. And that is what triggers the symptoms. So without that level of hormonal function, you start to see some of that impact on certainly your night sweats, your sleep. And often they, you know, we're so aware of some of the bigger, mentioning night sweats, we're often aware of some of those bigger impact, but those subtle changes, often what happens in perimenopause is women become a little bit more anxious, or that little bit of brain fog starts to creep in. And it's, I certainly, up until really recently, we never really spoke about perimenopause. We always just spoke about menopause. And as I say, I think that is probably the phase that affects us more than the actual once you're in menopause.
I would absolutely agree. And I'm so pleased, again, like I said, to be able to speak about this, because I'm definitely in perimenopause. Mm-hmm. I don't have night sweats or any bad sleep or anything like that. But the subtle differences that crept up on me were actually began with niggling old injuries,
yeah,
beginning to give me a little bit of jip. And I didn't know where that was coming from. And then the bit of anxiousness, maybe a bit of lack of joy. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking, you know, I'm so lucky. I do a job. My job is my life, is my love. And yes, you're thinking, I feel really just flat, yeah, just glum. Where's my joy? I'm doing absolutely what I love. So it didn't affect me in a really, really anxious way, but I know that it really can for some people. But I think that the big incentive to find out more was the niggling injuries and understanding how, as your estrogen levels drop, that how it affects so many things. And hallelujah for HRT is all I can say.
we'll talk. I mean, I'm so pleased you mentioned that, because as I say, it is those subtle, and there's good reason for the reason why your tendons start to stiffen. And so often in that phase, what we're seeing, and I work very closely with a lot of GPs, and even that awareness in our society is so often those are the women that are going to a GP or going to the doctor, and they're saying, well, you're depressed, and we're going to start you on antidepressants. And I think gradually there's more understanding that it's not about depression. It's about the hormonal levels. And you're absolutely right. I'm sure we'll go into a little bit more detail, is actually what is happening to your tendons, what's happening to your muscle as a result of this reduction, mostly in estrogen.
It's also, I've discovered I'm very lucky to have a GP that's very up to speed on all of this. It's a lottery, you know. My little sister recently had a similar visit to her GP, and I'm being a lot more informed about this now, saying, you know, you really need to go, I think this is what you're dealing with. And her GP said, wow, you're getting older, you'll just have to get on with it and learn to deal with your creaking back. And you know, she's 44, so not okay.
No, it's not okay. And actually, you know, Davina McCall with her program, I actually didn't see a lot of that, but I mean, fantastic that some of these women are out there actually raising the profile and having impact, where I have to be honest, where I think sometimes the medical profession has let women down.
Definitely.
And I think this is what's so great about this podcast, Rachel, and you putting it together, is that it starts with awareness, and it starts with everyone being more aware of what this phase looks like for women and feels like for women.
Well, Rachel, definitely. That was the whole point of what this whole campaign, this whole month we're doing, is because a lot of these areas are ones where people are maybe not comfortable talking about it. You know, the conversations need to start so that then the awareness can come in. We all can be better informed about what our bodies are doing at the various stages of life that we're going through. And then through that, you know, better understanding, more demand for information, then, you know, we can all look after ourselves a bit better. We can, you know, stop letting these things impact the sport that we enjoy, both from a physical and obviously mental level. It's the direction society's going. As you say, you know, Davina McCall, she's had her side of things. She's been very, very vocal about all this, and other campaigners have as well. And it's just time to bring equestrian into that conversation, I think.
Absolutely.
Definitely. And I think as you both flagged there, the thing with this sort of menopause, perimenopause, there are some of the symptoms we all know about. We all know about night sweats. We all know about hot flushes and things like that. We've mentioned them several times, but it's a wide spectrum of symptoms, side effects that people can go through, and not everyone is going to experience it in the same way.
Yeah.
So the more we can talk about it, and the more we can talk about the potential side effects people might be feeling, particularly the mental ones that you mentioned there, Mia, as well, which people might not realize are linked to what's happening in their bodies. It might just be a, you know, phase of life or whatever, or, you know, linked to something completely different. Actually, if you can start to put those puzzle pieces together, then we can start to do something about it.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's I think those mental side effects, they can affect your athletic performance or your competitive performance, and certainly and also your everyday life. One of the worst, and okay, it did not occur in any way to do with my equestrian world, but there was some rage in me sometimes. and you know, when you're coaching, and you're coaching a lot, and you're coaching a wide variety of ages, and someone said to me, they thought that God must have been having a laugh when he put pubescent teenagers with menopausal women at the same time in their life.
That's true.
You know, some deep breaths, and you know, those sort of things. And it was definitely for me last summer, these things sort of adding together, and certainly Davina's information, the podcast, the news and health stuff, and actually being part of the Youth Pathway program for coaches. I attended a seminar with Dr. Emma Ross from the Well HQ, and she's awesome. Now, this seminar was meant to be for coaches coaching pubescent girls primarily, but boys, you know, understanding about puberty, well, the whole conversation became, because of the age of the people in the room, I suppose, became more about the menopause, but that they are, you know, bookends really, and it's all to do with hormones. And yeah. I learned so much, and then actually was able to apply it to myself, you know, down the line, which is wonderful. And I think because we don't traditionally talk about it, you know, you just get on with it with a British stiff upper lip. Absolutely. And, you know, actually it needs to be talked about. Yeah. And that's why I shared your post like mad. And I want to talk about it. I think it's important.
Definitely. Well, let's maybe delve into that. What are some of the ways then that some of these, I mean, maybe if we start with the sort of the physical side of things, how can some of these affect your time actually specifically in the saddle?
So I went through the many years ago, 20 years ago, I broke my leg. No problem, happens. But then it began to give me jip. It was like it would almost clunk out of position and it wouldn't clunk back again. And I know that was to do with the ligaments, and the ligaments began to be less supple. So it would feel like almost like I'd dislocate. It was absolutely horrendous. I got stirrups with suspension in them. I've done everything. I'm acupuncture, physio, and I still do all of that. But fundamentally, estrogen has absolutely turned that around. I feel great. And I also feel as muscly and as trim and as fit as I ever have done, because there's this delightfully named meno belly that you hear talked around. And we get, you know, you get a bit soft in the middle. You go, well, I'm getting older. I don't have children, so I don't have that kind of, not excuse, but that reason. And I definitely noticed that in that I feel stronger, fitter. Yeah, I feel really sprightly again, having got my estrogen levels back up. So that's a real positive.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point in understanding for me. And you're right, that sort of meno belly, which we all experience, is because estrogen helps synthesize protein. So we have our protein, the estrogen says, right, we can do, and we synthesize it into lean muscle. And as that declines, and that's why, again, for me, it's about raising this awareness and understanding, is that, because what I see a lot of times with female athletes in equestrian and in other sports, when they're going in through this phase, particularly perimenopause, is, I've cut down everything, Ash, and I'm hardly eating anything, yeah, because it, and the reason, because that estrogen, and as you say, it is often the only way to address that is to do HRT. But of course, not everyone can take HRT. I certainly can't. It definitely didn't agree with me. So what I'm again, there are many things that we can do that we can help with. And for me, it's about modes of training. Mm-hmm. So I often say that impact, as you say, Rach, in the saddle, is any of the riders that I've worked with who are in that phase will tell you that I'm saying you have got to go into the gym. Or if you're not, you know, if you're not a gym bunny, it's what you're doing at home, and it has to be high intensity, because that high intensity work, that really full on work for 20 seconds, 30 seconds with a long rest period, is what helps the mitochondria response and helps us process the glucose. So I know I'm bringing a bit of science into it, but I think it's also important for women to understand that, because we all tend to knock ourselves and think, oh my word, you know, I'm getting a little bit of a belly, that, and if I'm in a dressage and my jacket's not fitting as tight, that's the reason why. But there are some things that you can combat, and certainly your high intensity interval training, I'm absolutely passionate about keeping anyone over 40, 45 doing plyometric work, so we keep that tendon, those tendons start to change early 40s, late 30s, early 40s, a little bit earlier in men actually. So we should be doing that tendon stiffness and plyometric work. And then a lot of people say to me, what should I do about resistance? And it's about high load, as high load as you can take. And whether it's you lifting hay bales or whether you're lifting weights, it's so important, because that prevents the loss of that lean muscle mass. And I think my last sort of point with Mia said as well, when we talk about an impact on the saddle, is it's about recovery. And as we enter this phase where we might have been, well, I can do, you know, 15 hours straight without a break, actually the better, the smarter we are about how we recover means we can train harder. But that balance, that stress and rest recovery ratio, is so important, I think, in this perimenopausal and menopausal stage.
That's a really good tip, actually, isn't it? Good to hear, to know that that is helping us, and it's not, you know, you're not being a wimp, or you know, we tend to be a little bit like that. Work harder. We've got to
totally,
do more. Actually,
totally.
That rest period is crucial to recover and be able to go again.
Yeah.
I'd say mentally too.
Yeah.
As a rider, but for me, the riding's fun. It's all fun, obviously. But when you're coaching, especially for long stretches, the period of time of concentration, again, I've certainly implemented stricter rules on myself around how long I'm in that real concentration phase for everybody's benefit, really.
fantastic.
Yeah, no, that's really good.
There's a science called chronobiology, which we could do a whole different podcast on. So chrono meaning time, and biology, it's how our cells respond to time, and that's set. There's things called ultradian rhythms and circadian rhythms, and ultradian rhythms basically go in line with our heart rate and our glucose levels throughout the day, and how our brain works. And basically, we are optimum around about 90 minutes of work with 20 minutes recovery. And so few of us do that. And actually, that's our biology of our system. And I'm really, even more so when we're in this phase, it's understanding that, actually, let me go and take that break. Let me go and have some nuts. Let me refuel with protein. Yeah. We know, and there's some really good studies at the moment as well, where one of the top tips I would absolutely give to women in this phase is really reduce your fructose. You know, there's high sugar fruit. You know, stick to your apples and your berries, and we definitely become less carbohydrate tolerant. So that doesn't mean, and I will quickly caveat this, it doesn't mean a keto diet, but it definitely means, you know, the days, and I reflect on that, you know, when I was a hockey player years ago, I could eat all my pastas and white bread, you name it, and never put on weight. Now I look at a pasta dish, I'm thinking, that's going to sit on my tummy. So it's balancing those slow release carbs, those, you know, getting your carbs from really good, your sweet potatoes, your brown rice. And that is a known. We, again, because of this estrogen dropping, because of the progesterone dropping, our ability to actually, you know, assimilate and process carbs is reduced. So I absolutely think that's a consideration to everyone out there. But do not have carbs. Can I just make that very clear? But it's complex carbs. And avoiding those, you know, highly processed foods, and really trying to think to, as we say, the foods you can dig out the ground, pick off a tree or catch it in some nice high protein.
There we go. Everyone who's going to be listening to this and having their brown rice and sweet potatoes for dinner straight afterwards, which we are all on board.
Yeah, there's some great, I'm sure we'll put this out, Rachel, is some of the real, what we call phytoestrogen foods, which I'm sure we'll come to a little bit later in the podcast. But there are some really clear and research evidence based that actually, if you're snacky on things, you know, grab a handful of almonds, get your soya in those, because those are what we call phytoestrogen. They are high in estrogen and helpful to have in your diet.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that was kind of where I was going to take this next, is some of these sort of lifestyle. You just beat me to it, Ash. I'm basically redundant here.
Sorry.
Do me out of a job. I'll just leave you two to it. But yes, but it was to go on to some of these lifestyle strategies that you can put in place. I mean, again, we've sort of touched on it a bit there around some of the sort of gym work and the fitness work, and a bit of the food. And we can definitely come into that a bit more and talk more about, particularly on, you know, when we're on the yard, we're there a lot of the time, without all day, and it's making sure that, you know, you've got the right foods with you on the yard to make sure you're fueling your body and, you know, giving it what you need, and not letting yourself come into this sort of slump, which is then not helped by everything else that's going on with your body. And I guess sleep must be quite important as well. You know, again, we've touched on it several times. There are some of the side effects, the night sweats and things, which can make it much harder to sleep at night. And when we've then also got this necessary recovery period, more so than during the younger years, that must be a very important consideration that people are going to have to take into account.
Yeah, I think sleep is massively, and in fact, you know, probably throughout, I was one of the comments which you may have seen, because I certainly saw it on the website, was a comment. In fact, I think I shared some stuff, and a physiologist colleague of mine said, Ash, don't forget to talk about the sleep throughout the life cycle of the woman, because it is massively impacted when you both, you know, going through, as you were chatting about me, around your prepubescent and puberty. And then certainly I think any one of us who are in that menopause phase can relate to sleep being disrupted. My biggest advice is I'm not big on taking loads of supplements, but we know that magnesium is definitely one of the minerals that is really useful to take. Your melatonin and tryptonin are things that help melatonin. So again, remember I was talking about chronobiology. If we go back to the circadian rhythm, as things get darker, melatonin starts to get released, and melatonin releases in our body as our body temperature starts to cool. So as we get ready for bed, generally our temperatures of our body starts to cool. It's why we always advise sleeping in a cool room to match. If you sleep in a warm room, then your body never cools down and therefore the melatonin never gets released. So we always talk about making your own melatonin, where go and have that bath 15, 20 minutes before you're going to get into bed, because your core temperature will increase. And then as it's reducing quicker, because you've just increased that because of the hot bath, as it reduces, that melatonin gets released. And sometimes that's really helpful to help you drift off to sleep. As I've mentioned before, almonds and walnuts are two of the nuts that those are, I would say, absolutely number one to snack on. Cottage cheese has a lot of tryptonin in, and something like turkey. So if you are having, as a woman, having to just experiment a bit about that, reduce your carbs at night, go on to something like turkey, see if that, and then there's something called tar cherry juice. You can get that on Amazon, which again, many of my friends absolutely swear by their little shot of tart cherry juice. And we in fact use that when we're going over many time zones with the athletes. We'll give them something called Cherry Active, which helps get to sleep on the plane and therefore hopefully reducing jet lag. So there are certainly supplementation that is worthwhile trying. And then, you know, all the usual sleep hygiene. So sleeping in a cold room, making sure if there are bright lights, you know, reducing the amount of television. If you just sort of slumped in front of the television for hours, that just stimulates your brain. And those are sort of the sleep hygiene areas that I think are really important too. Bit of yoga, inversion, lying with your feet. You know, if you want to do a downward dog, that kind of inversion. We know that some of those poses are also really related to helping sleep. And the most important thing, if you are having disrupted sleep, don't lie in bed and look at the ceiling and think, I can't sleep. Get up, come downstairs, have a milky drink, or if not, just change the room that you're in and try and disrupt it that way. Read a book, don't go onto your phone where you're going to stimulate, and then just try and change the position that you're in, and often you'll drift off. But it is definitely, we could probably do a whole podcast on sleep, but I think trying some of those nutritional aspects, I think, are important.
Okay. Ash just keeps giving me more and more homework for this. We're going to do a podcast on sleep. We're going to do a podcast on the chronorhythms, all of that. At this rate, I'm going to be doing one of these a week for the rest of the year. Not that I'm complaining, because I do have great time doing them and I also learn a lot. So, you know, it's all good, folks.
I've just learned a lot there. I've been taking notes about almonds and walnuts and stuff.
Yeah.
That's excellent. I was also advised by my optician about walnuts around my eyesight. I can't remember exactly why, but there was something to do with the focus in your lens and how that can react to certain things. So definitely a good one.
It's a good one for heart as well. Really good for anyone who's had heart issues. I always recommend having a couple of 4 or 5 walnuts a day.
Excellent.
It's a great, great nut.
There's a snack to have on the yard as well.
Yeah, some walnuts.
Yeah, and your seeds, you know, the soya-based foods, your edamames, if you're going to have a yogurt, have a soya yogurt. You can't really tell the difference, to be honest. Flax seeds, sesame seeds are, you know, and that's certainly what I'll do for breakfast. I'll have my sort of, you know, big bowl of yogurt with lots of those berries and then just a handful of nuts and seeds. So you're getting that into your system. Hummus, chickpeas. Really, really good snacks to have and all of your berries. So you can keep that energy level up. And that's so, so important for women in perimenopause and menopause.
It is 100% something that I have absolutely learned, that you need to fuel yourself properly. In all of the roles that I have and as I could look back over my life, how I've relied on sugar for a boost and then had a crash. And you know, I'm thinking, I'm coaching at 5 p.m. thinking, why have I got the shakes and I feel like I'm going to faint? And, yeah. and it took me a long time to work that out. So that's super good to know. And anyone that I coach will know that I nag them about, eating a banana and when it's in preparation for a show or before they
Brilliant.
Eat chips or whatever.
Brilliant.
So, love thank you. Thank you.
but you know, again, I know this is not just perimenopause, but the really interesting and again, I see this a lot of exactly what you say, Mia, around a lot of riders are so busy. I haven't got time to eat ash. And then, but I do eat a good meal at night. But that whole day you've gone through, and this is so important for all. You may have heard of something called REDS. We're going to talk about that in the last week of this month, which is relative energy deficiency. And we are seeing certainly our riders that have less bone density because of the fact that they're in this relative energy. You have this energy in, energy out, that whilst you might get that as a bonus at the end of the evening, you've gone through 8 hours of being energy deficient. And certainly when we're talking about bone health, and we know because of the reduce of estrogen and progesterone reducing, we're also highly, highly at risk at this stage of having a reduction in our bone health. And for this phase, I mean, I'm passionate about that through all the phase, but I think it's one thing we as a sport we need to look at is it's a weight sensitive sport. So clearly we want to keep that weight down, but we think we keep that weight down by starving, and that has a huge impact on our physiological system. It has, interestingly, the energy deficit creates a huge amount of stress in our body. So what our body does is, hang on a minute, I'm in a starvation mode here. I'm going to release cortisol. So cortisol is a hormone which then holds onto fat. So the very thing that you're trying to do, the body will go into, and that happens hugely when we are trying. And I hear that all the time with riders as they get older and think, gosh, I'm getting this tummy, I need to now deplete myself. And it actually has a really, really impact in certainly on bone health.
Rachel, could I mention periods and period pants?
I love
to putting a little shocker out there. So, Ash, that's just a slightly off topic, but
no, that's good.
A couple of things that have sort of been flagged in this phase have been, I know that my periods were just everywhere. Like you never know what was going to happen. And if you were at a show in a pair of white breeches, that's not great. One thing I'm really proud of is raising the issue of grey breeches many years ago with British Show Jumping, which were then, woohoo, it's like, if I never do anything else, I feel very proud that I started that conversation. And we can now ride in darker colours, which
Testing.
For so many reasons, I feel is a good thing.
Yeah.
And I finally discovered the other day a period pant that I like, because I don't like a big pant, I like a small pant. And not only does it have that side of it, but it also provides a bit of padding for us horse riders. I literally posted on Facebook the other day, half of my family / husband / people that I know were cringing in a hole going, oh my God, she's doing it again.
Doing this, yeah.
Exactly. Oh my God. But the conversation that was prompted was brilliant around what size pants people wear, obviously, but also, you know, how everybody felt about that and how they managed it. And, you know, thanks for talking about it. So I just think we need to talk about these things more.
Definitely. Sorry. I mean, well, that was one of the real things that came out last week in the content we were putting out around the menstrual cycle and things like that, was people commenting on white breeches and pants and all this stuff. It, you know, it's a definite talking point. And as you say, the rules have shifted now, and, you know, other colours are being allowed in, which is great. And that is because we're all talking about this stuff more, which is exactly what we want to achieve, which is brilliant. And as you say, and, you know, one of the side effects of this stage of life is changes in the frequencies of your period. So while people kind of think, oh, menopause, that means none of that anymore, you have got this whole period beforehand where things are going very topsy-turvy, and it's a consideration that has to come in alongside everything else, is these things are changing and it's far more easy to be caught unawares.
Yeah, and add that to some already sort of strange anxieties that may have crept in that you don't know what they're about, and you know, then you can imagine how that can affect a rider. And I coach all ages, but, you know, certainly you'll your ladies around the sort of 40s into 50s that probably are professionals and ride and jump and train for fun, then there's all of those different considerations to take. So it's we need some joined up thinking there. So can we keep talking about it and not be embarrassed?
Yeah. Definitely. Well, I mean, and that leads us quite nicely on to some of the sort of the mental stuff that happens as well, because you know we've talked there in quite depth about some of the physical stuff going on, but we did also touch at the beginning some of the mental changes that can happen, whether that's sort of that brain fog that you can go, the anxiety that comes in. What are some of the things that maybe people can do to kind of, obviously, well, number one, I guess, embrace that stuff, but then also what can be done to help it and support people?
Yeah, I think from a mental health point of view, there's some biggies there. There's the concentration and decision making, which Mia, you've spoken about, mood changes definitely, and the anxiety, I think, are probably the big three pillars of what happens to the brains with these changes of hormones. And I think, like anything, I think some of the stuff we've already spoken about, I think diet is really important. I think if you you know, perhaps when you're younger, getting away with a diet where you have fast foods, and a lot of, I was reading a really interesting book called Ultra Processed People, which is fascinating. You read it, you'll never have another processed food again. But I do think diet and some of the things we've touched on already are absolutely worthwhile considering. And I think stress management, I think, you know, we talk about things like mindfulness sort of willy-nilly, but I think I always recommend ladies of a certain age to go and do some yoga, go and do some movement with breathing. Pilates is really good. So we tap into our sympathetic systems, our symptom, which is flight or flight, and we want to get that parasympathetic by breathing. So I'm a real advocate for breathing, and particularly when they're preparing for competition. I'm sure you see that. I see that in a lot of riders where the breath is up here, where you just want to deep breath and just relax and use those great big bellows of lungs. And what that does is it also just calms down your sympathetic nervous system. So, and I think the big one, and we part of this talking about this now, is about seeking support. Talk about it, you know, and actually by actually saying to someone, you know, my God, my brain is all over the place today, and recognizing it without thinking I'm just going to, as you said, Mia, just tight, you know, upper lip, and I'm just going to crack on, is actually, I recognize that this is something, and it's hormonally different. It's not an excuse. It's about recognizing, and I definitely think seeking and connecting with people and talking about it is really important in some of these mental considerations.
I would say that is the most important thing, actually, just actually to say it, and not to sort of suck it up in our British way, to actually share that information. And certainly from my place in a coaching mode, if you like, I feel so much more in tune or aware of these things than I would ever have been previously. And so then that helps me to be able to help other people and start to talk about it. And that's just amazing. The puberty side of things we know is difficult enough, but this phase of life, I would have had no clue about, even though I was merrily trundling into it. And then, you know, suddenly you start to inform yourself, and you know, in a coaching role, that's just amazing to be able to help others and to help them talk. And whether it's a one-to-one in a coaching session, or whether it's a group of women, or however you do it, it's everything to just get it out there. Everybody's symptoms are different, and as my doctor said to me, they're retrospective as well. You kind of don't know it's happening until it's happened, and then you sort of go, oh yeah, that's probably that, but you didn't realize it to start off with. So I think that's absolutely huge. And the symptoms are, the array of symptoms are huge. They're so vast, and you may not add them together and go, oh, menopause or perimenopause, because people's ages are vast as well when it all kicks in.
Yes,
and you might not realize if it's stress or nerves, or it could be anything. So doing this, what we're doing right now, I think is massive.
I think, as you say, that perimenopause that can start, and, you know, we always think all menopause is around your 50s, but actually those are changes are happening as early as 40s, and I think we miss it, and that is, you know, definitely where you can make changes that have then less impact when you're in menopause happens. It's actually not too much of an issue.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Actually, the very good friend of mine who has been instrumental, and because of her nature, she does a lot of research, and she handed me this research, and she's 10 years older than me, and she went, oh, I wish I'd have done this 10 years ago. You know, same thing, just it not being talked about. Maybe it's a slightly generational thing as well. You know, we get better at being more open. But yeah, absolutely, that prevention for the future, you're just going to go through it hopefully in a much healthier way.
And I think you've said it, Mia, is the education point of view is that self-education, and that's this. So I'm sure Rachel after this will share, there's some great books out there. Next Level by Stacey Sims I think is one of the best books I've read on just really sound advice going through these stages. But there's just so much information, so I'd absolutely be saying to any listeners to this podcast is really educate yourself in what is out there. And then finally, what we haven't spoken about, but is HRT, because again, so many women think, oh no, you know, that's cancer forming, and you know, it increases the risk of uterine cancer. And back in the day, yes, it did, because they used to give high levels of estrogen without realizing that actually, if you've still got a uterus, you need to protect it with progesterone. So now every HRT, whether it's in a pill form or whether it's transdermal, will be, or a patch, will be a balance of estrogen and progesterone, and that just completely reduces the risk, unless of course you've got a big family history of course uterine cancer. But to also put that out there to the listeners that there's much less risk and there's so much more knowledge. It's a much smaller dose, a microdosing of estrogen and progesterone. But do make sure that, as you say, most of the GPs are far better educated. But you know, with you educating, saying, hang on a minute, I it's got to be a mixture of estrogen, and I need to protect my uterus if I've got one, with progesterone. Absolutely important.
It's someone described it to me as the estrogen is making the grass grow and the progesterone is the lawnmower.
Absolutely. Absolutely right.
Keeping it in check.
Yeah. Keeping it in check so you don't get that proliferation of cells in the uterus. Yeah, absolutely.
Made sense to me anyway.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's one to have a conversation with your GP, and you know, we've touched on the fact that some GPs are better educated than others, even though, you know, it's definitely getting better out there. So, you know, to find someone that, you know, find someone who's supportive, you can work with, to find the solutions and the support where, you know, where you can, and to help you, because as we've said, everyone is unique, everyone's different, everyone's going through this in different ways. And you know, we touched on it at the beginning, so you know, the HRT or hormone replacement therapy, I think it is in full, works, you know, better for some people than it does for others. So it's not it's not a one size fits all solution. You know, as with everything we talk about when we talk about with health, it doesn't work for everyone in the same way. So it's experimenting, finding what works for you, as you said, you know, doing the research, looking what's out there. We're definitely going to try and signpost to some of these resources on our website. Everything we talk about throughout Female Health February is available on the British Equestrian website, britishequestrian.org.uk. And there's a dedicated page there that's got all these resources, all the graphics and stuff that we've put out. All the podcasts are there as well. So if you've missed anything this month, either, you know, what's come and what is still to come, make sure you check out that website, and you know, say read, educate, make that the start of your educational journey. And once you've, you know, taken advantage of what's out there, the world is your oyster. There's still plenty more out there. So just make sure that you're, you know, checking out reputable sources and finding what works for you, I think is the key that we've taken away from today. We're coming to the end of the conversation, but is there anything else anyone would like to flag at this point? Anything that we might have missed? Any take home messages that anyone would like to leave with our listeners?
Just talk. As a coach, I coach develop. I work with other coaches. I obviously work with riders. I'd like us to be better at talking and sharing information. This is a great place to start. If I can nurture and develop that more, that will be something I'm very happy about. And I will continue to do so. And definitely, Ash, having learned a little bit more about the time management today, again, that's something we can build into our coach development, where we're saying, guys, actually, it's not big and clever to be stood in the arena for 12 hours straight. You might think you're doing great because you're working nonstop, but actually, be smarter about it. So that's really landed with me, I think, as well.
Good.
Yeah, thank you.
I think pleasure. I think for me it is, you know, so often we think of, and I've had these conversations with riders where, oh, this is, you know, my career coming to an end, or this is the menopause means I'm this, I'm not as good as this. And actually, no, by some of the things that we've spoken about, by managing your inflammatory process, by making sure you're as strong as you can be, this can be massively empowering. You know, we're all at stages of our lives where, you know, we should be wiser. We've learned, and it's not about, for me, it's about empowering and enabling, and actually being, if we pay attention to all the things that we've spoken about, particularly some of those lifestyle choices, you can actually empower yourself. And that just helps for me. I'm really interested in that sustaining of health, but also sustaining of your performance when you're going out there. And we should embrace that. It's not, oh, you know, I'm just going to sit and my life is starting to change. But you need to make some changes. You absolutely do, and understand what it is that you need to do.
That is a great point as well, but that I just also would like to mention. I've done one of the best things of my entire life as a 50-year-old woman, and that's ride for Great Britain.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Fantastic.
But I don't think I would have handled that in the same way, not knowing what I know now. So I was that's a real plus to a bit of age and wisdom and experience.
Totally.
But to continue to educate and empower ourselves and others.
Yeah.
And as we know, horses are good for the soul.
Yes.
I hope I fall off one when I to die. I don't want to never, ever not ride. Do you know what I mean? So
yes,
you know, this it's great for us. It's great. It is great for our mental health. They are amazing creatures. And at the end of the day, that's why we're here, I would imagine.
Absolutely right.
From some point.
Absolutely right.
Yeah, definitely. It's a phase to be embraced, I think.
Totally.
Yeah.
But not agree more.
Definitely. And that is, and I think that's the key thing with equestrian sport, is it's so special because you can do it from those very, very early years that we talked about, all the way through this stage of life and well beyond, and you know, and have that enjoyment as well. And you know, obviously, you know, our bodies change, our minds change, every, you know, that it's a roller coaster out there. But if we can just keep that enjoyment, that love of the horse, that enjoyment of the sport, we're on to a winner, guys. I think, you know,
that's all
we can ask for at the end of the day.
Well, into our not even peri and menopause, but post menopause, because we haven't even spoken about post menopause. Post menopause, no. Supposedly the symptoms stop and you head on off. But yes, we, you know, that is for me the aim, is you do all of that right in that perimenopause, menopause phase, then it's just, you know, you move on and continue riding well into your old age, whatever that might be for individuals.
Yes, that'll be me. Winch me on and winch me
too.
On.
I'll be jogging around somewhere, albeit very slowly. Still running.
Oh, there we go. Well, thank you very much both for joining me. Thank you to Mia and to Ash. We've had a very, very enjoyable conversation. Again, I've learned a lot. I know Mia's been sitting there with her pencil and pen writing everything down. Ash has been educating us all with her wisdom. It's been absolutely brilliant. I hope everyone at home who's been listening to this has also enjoyed this, also got plenty to take away with them. As I say, make sure you check out all the resources that are on the website. We're going to signpost some external stuff that's have been mentioned here and some other ones as well. And there's the stuff up there already from last week, all the stuff on menstrual cycle. There's a bit of menopause on there already. There will be plenty more. We've got loads more coming up for Female Health February.
Yeah.
We've got stuff coming together on breast health, bra fit. That's what's coming up next.
Yes, very good. So very important.
Exactly. Make sure you stay tuned for that. Make sure you listen to everything else we've got coming up. If you've missed any of the podcasts, as I say, they're on the website, or you can find them on wherever it is that you found your podcast, wherever it is that you found this particular episode. And we hope that you will join us soon. Make sure that you keep commenting on social media, sharing our posts, telling us, you know, what you're enjoying, what else also you'd like to know as well, because you know, that's how this podcast came about. People asked for it and we give the people what they want.
If there's
anything else female health related you want to find out about, just tell us, and if we can, we will. So thank you very much, everyone, and we hope to see you soon.